off, runway 28 left, fly runway heading.
Welcome to another brand new episode of Living in Flight, your go-to podcast for everything in the world of aviation. Exclusive interview conversations with industry professionals and enthusiasts. Strap on your seatbelt.
Put on your headset.
And get ready for Living in Flight.
Hey everyone, it's Matt.
And this is Drew.
Welcome back to Living in Flight.
Today we sit down with Joe Check. Joe comes to us with 15 years experience as an air traffic controller. He currently works in the control tower at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport.
The conversation kicks off with Joe talking about a video on his Instagram where a high schooler attempts to land a 737 in the full motion simulator. Let's get into it.
By far the highlight of the camp. See how bad they can screw that up. So, I don't know if I forgot if it was that video or that sim. We're literally planted it and all the screens go black. Yeah. Right? Like, oh my god, Ace Camp, we just bought a freaking simulator.
It was so funny. Like, we're watching, it's like sync rate. And you hear the instructor in the back, pull up.
No, seriously, pull up.
Yeah. That's always a fun day.
Yeah.
Tell us about Ace Camp.
We've been around since 1991. I was actually a student back in the camp back in 1997.
Okay. What does it stand for?
Aviation Career Education Camp. Okay. Again, same thing you guys are doing. Yep. This is aviation. It's not just about being a pilot. It's not being about an air traffic controller. Every single job in between. Try to cover at least the best we can. It's a week-long overnight camp. This year we'll be based at the U of M for the dorm, at the dorms. Every kid gets their own room. We're based out of there. Well, you have classrooms there for, you know, ground training. But then we go to all different tour operators, aviation type things around the cities. For example, first day, Delta. We basically spend a half a day there, go behind the scenes, ramp tower, we go in their maintenance facilities. Then actually go airside where the ramper's at, throwing the bags on and all that kind of stuff. Again, just here it is, right? Awesome. So, yeah, it's a really cool thing. And here's aviation. You know, the past couple years kind of suck for us. Reference COVID with the cancel camps. Last year we did a 3 1-day aviation type events outside, obviously. So now this is our first kind of year getting back in the swing of things again. You know, we go to the ATC facilities. We do a lot of stuff out of South St. Paul Airport. Mankato will bring up their airplanes, four airplanes generally. All the kids get to fly with an instructor.
Nice.
Going on the Stanton, kids get to fly in a glider.
Oh, that's sick.
So that's for them never been in a cockpit from. Hey, let's go on an airplane without an engine. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's just mind blowing right there. Now they're sitting in the front of the glider and they're pulling, you know, they're pulling the string to go away from the tow airplane and right. And they're flying, literally flying without an engine. So that's always fun watching them. Helicopter rides, go to Sun Country, go to Endeavor there, that Pan Am facility for the Sims there. So it's just everything aviation in 1 week. And, you know, myself being a controller, other counselors that are in the aviation industry, pilots, it's just a good way for them to connect, right? And as you guys know, connecting is the big thing in aviation. Yeah. So
what age limits?
In high school. So you're going to be in high school going, if you're in ninth grade, going into 10th grade next year. So basically 10th through 12th grades.
Yeah. And what's the like application process like?
Yeah. So we're in the cusp of releasing all the information here pretty quick. We're kind of just sewing up some things here at the tail end, but hopefully with the next week or so, as we sit here, middle of February. So, applications will be open for about 2 months. It's nothing crazy, but just a little essay about why you want to be here, right? Generally we get more applications than we have spots in camp for. So we go through, you know, just a grading process and just kind of see who really wants to be here, you know? So, it's a great opportunity, a great week. Again, me doing this way back in the day, just, you know, seeing these kids for the first time, they're all timid in that very first day of camp. And by the end of camp, they're like, man, this is the coolest thing ever. Yeah. Even though some of the kids don't get in aviation, they still think it was the best week ever in their life.
Yeah.
You know? So we try to provide those opportunities again, the networking and just providing the cool stuff to do, in aviation. So,
So how did you get into aviation?
Ace Camp was probably the first thing. I always knew I wanted to be a controller, actually, which is crazy. Way back in the day, my dad used to take me to the airport here at MSP, the old Super America that's on Post Road there. Just sit there for hours and just watch airplanes. Had my little aviation scanner.
Was your dad in aviation?
No, he wasn't. Okay. Nope, nothing to do with it. Just knew just I loved aviation. And, yeah, exactly. So he took me there, every weekend, sit there for hours. Ace Camp happened, and then that, once you finish high school, trying to figure out what the hell you want to do with life, right? Yeah. And at the time, I didn't really know quite yet. I know I want to do aviation, but I took a crazy different route. I actually went to Century College, a community college just north here in the cities. I actually did law enforcement for a year. But then after a year and a half, I was like, you know what? I really need to do aviation. So that's where I jumped back in. Long story short, ended up at UND, went there for air traffic control, graduated in 2005.
Nice.
So that's kind of my little pathway to aviation. So,
and why'd you choose UND?
Close, somewhat close to home, but still far enough away from the parents to come check on me.
Yeah.
Great program. I mean, from the flight training to the ATC, they have three different ATC simulators, from the tower simulator to the radar simulators. It's everything that they basically prepare you for once you get to the academy, which is at the Oklahoma City for the FAA. So they have the exact same airport, academy airport, just training you again once you get there to succeed. So how that works is
you do all your schooling at UND, you go through these simulators, and then you get hired on by the FAA, and then you go to Oklahoma City to start stuff.
So a little different from when I went through. When I went through, you were guaranteed to get a call from the FAA, say, hey, we're ready for you. Generally, it took about a year after graduating to get that call. I'll never forget. It was a Wednesday night. I was just finished my shift at Target, just throwing boxes on the shelves. And here's a call already says Oklahoma City. I'm like, oh, here it is.
You knew.
And they said, what are you doing next week? I'm like, I'm ready to work. Yeah. So that was my basically, hey, you were ready for an ATC. And it was definitely a cool and experience going through the whole program and watching it basically, pay off. Back to how you get into it, a little different from when I went through. You're guaranteed to get a call by the FAA. Now it's a little different. If you go to UND or different ATC school, you're not guaranteed to get that call. You have to wait until a job application basically appears on usajobs.gov, and you're basically just applying with everybody else. Now, granted, if you go to UND or another ATC school, you do get a little extra bonus points or whatever that you wouldn't just get off the street people. It's a way different process. My advice is ATC is such a very narrow field to get into. There's only 14,000 of us, right? Controllers here in the US, right? And you only have one employer. That's the government. That's the FAA, right? And to put all your eggs in one basket like that, that's up to you, but I recommend you got to go. There needs to be a plan B, such as with anything in life, right? You got to have that plan B. And whether you do something else, aviation, get your pilot's license and go the commercial route, or do business or whatever, there has to be a plan B, because you might not get a call back from the FAA, or you might not score enough as the person sitting next to you. So that's just kind of the downfall of it, right? And it's very cutthroat. Once you do get to the academy, you screw up a couple times, you're done, right? You're shown the door. So
can you tell us what that training's like? A lot of us, like on the pilot side, we know what a flight simulator looks like.
Yeah.
What's the simulation process?
Yeah. So like at UND, or at the academy, they have these very, even at the tower at MSP, it's the same type, visual type simulators. Basically, they recreate a tower cab, for example, and they have all the same flight strips here that we use to keep track of you guys, that we have up in the simulator. There is voice recognition to control, say cleared for takeoff, clear to land, that type of stuff. It's fairly easy functions like that. But there's also pseudo pilot sitting around in the background, entering all the commands in for whatever you want to do.
Okay.
It's very realistic. The graphics are awesome. It's way better than probably when I went through.
And how long do you how long do you do that? So I know that the air traffic control training is like, depending on where you're going and what you're doing, it can be a super long process.
Oh, yeah.
So like, I guess just walk through like, how long do you do the simulators
So at the academy, you're there for about three to four months for tower training. So again, they walk you pretty much, you know, here's what a runway is and here's what an airplane. I mean, they definitely progress pretty quick once you get there. So that's a 3 to 4 month process. If you pass, then you go to your facility. So, the facility here's where, you know, if someone's really looking to get an air traffic control, and if they want to do this or not at the academy, they base, you get to pick of where you want to go off a pre-selected list. So they have a pre-selected list, about 14 or 15 different facilities. And if you finish number one in the class, you get first pick.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So there's a lot of things that go into it. Like, again, when I went through, I knew where I was going to go. I went to Grand Forks for my first facility. So basically right back at UND, living the college life again. But when you go to the academy, you do not know where you're going to go until you finish the very last day. To me, that's mind blowing.
Oh, you don't even see the list till the last day.
No, I believe they show the list when you start. Okay. I believe someone will have to correct me on that.
I have seen that the job posting, and it's like must be willing to live anywhere in the U.S. Like whatever. But assigned.
Imagine
by the
if you're
FAA.
That 15th person, you finish last, even though you pass.
Right.
You're stuck with Fairbanks, Alaska. You're stuck with wherever you
and it's
probably
not
don't
like
want
you
to go.
Probably want to say no at that point. Like,
exactly.
You just went through the academy and you went to school.
Like. I've heard stories of students basically bartering in class, like, hey, I'll give you $5,000-$10,000 to take that pick from you.
Oh, they'll let you do that?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's what I've heard, you know, that's the thing with ATC. There's so many things that, you know, it's just so hard to describe and might change how you look at getting hired and where you want to be. Everybody wants to work at Minneapolis. Everybody wants to work at, you know, these cool facilities, LAX or DFW, the bigger airports and push them 10, right? But in reality, you're probably going to be stuck in Gary, Indiana. Right. You know, and you might be there for 4 or 5 years. Right. So you finish the academy for 3 to 4 months. You go to Gary, Indiana, 2, 3, 4 years, you know, to train. And then based off the staffing levels, you might have to stay there. Right. And so that's definitely a downside. It's not easy as you might think to be able to move around. Right. So
what does that progression look like then? Like, how does someone get their big break to finally work at LA?
Yeah. So I was lucky when I was at Grand Forks. It was a little different hiring. Again, all different hiring practices. I mean, this is 15 years. I've been in the agency for 15 years now. So back when I was in Grand Forks, I was there from 2006 to 2009. Basically, at the time, you just put it, you hear about they put out internal announcements, openings, and you just bid on it. Somewhat process now, but again, it's based off of facility levels and staffing. If the current facility that you're at now just can't release you because of staffing, you're not going to go anywhere. No matter how bad the other facility is. So I'm not too inept on it right now as far as the process, since I'm my family's here, right? And I'm not going anywhere. So I haven't been in the process, but there is a few guys at the tower at Minneapolis that are currently in it. And there's actually the announcement's actually going to take place tomorrow for another round of selections. So yes, you could go to a facility if you're number one in the class. I'm like, boy, I want to go there for the rest of my life. Perfect, right?
Yeah.
But then there's so many other things you need to look into. Even though you might not want to go to Gary, Indiana, but you need to look at their staffing levels. How long does it take students to get checked out? I mean, those type of things you need to take in consideration. You know, so.
What are all the different options for air traffic control, right? You got like Tower Cab, you got Tracon, you got Center, right? How do you, like, when you applied to, or when you had your app into the FAA and they called you, right? So it says, do they say, hey, we have, you know, 15 tower positions open you want to come down, or do they just say, hey, we have 15 controller positions and you could end up at center, you could end up at Tracon, you could end up here, you could end up there.
So the two options when they call you, either en route or terminal. Terminal is tower or Tracon, and then en route's en route. So two different paths.
So when they called you on that Wednesday, they were like, hey, we've got a terminal position.
Yep, exactly. And at the time, I could pick what states I wanted to be in, which was nice. So if you don't want to work at a center, just don't pick a state that has a center. But that, I mean, those days are long gone. So now, when they call you, you don't want to say no, right? I mean, you just want to get your foot in the door, right? I mean, you can say no, but you don't know when that next call is going to be. The government may shut down because they run out of money and they ain't going to call you for, you know, for another year, right? So
I guess that's kind of like being a pilot, right? When Delta calls, you don't know what airplane you're getting on. You want the Airbus, but you show up to INDOC and you bid, you might get the 7-5 or something, right? Sure. Like whatever.
And who would ever think, right? Those are the things you're going through your head. But I really want to fly, right? But
right. So you can say no.
7-3.
Yeah. Interesting.
So talk to us about Minneapolis Tower then. Mm-hmm. What's it like to run an operation like that? Because, you know, it's for a lot of passengers, you just get in a plane, taxi for a bit, they give you a safety demo, and you're out the, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So Minneapolis, just a general overview, four different runways, two parallels, one crossing runway, our longest runway, 422, 11,000 feet, 11,006 feet to be exact, and then 1735 that parallels Cedar Avenue there. We don't use 422 just because it crosses all the runways, right? Very inefficient, right? Back in the day when Delta and Northwest used to fly their the 747s from here to Tokyo, they would need that every day, especially in the summertime, hot and heavy. So we primarily stick to the parallels, obviously. And Minneapolis is very unique that we land and depart the same runways, right? You've flown to Chicago, you've flown into DFW. They have designated departure runways and designated arrival runways, right? Easy. Yeah. Right. You can, when I say clear for takeoff, you can sit there for 2 minutes in a row and do whatever you want. Right.
Because, somebody's not coming on short final.
Exactly. And for new pilots that aren't familiar with that at Minneapolis, when I say, 3-0 left, line up and wait, traffic's on a 4 mile final, I need you ready.
They're coming.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They're coming right behind you, it is cool being able to move aircraft like that, because you always see those cool pictures, right? One's taking off and one's landing right behind, right? That's what we do. But everyone needs to be on the same page about what's expected, and when you exit the runway, you need to get off the runway, right? Just keep moving. That's all we care about, So just keep moving off the runway. So two parallel runways that we do primarily a majority of our traffic based off of winds, got to take off and land into the wind. We'll use 1735. If the winds are on the southeast, we'll depart runway 17. So it's great for us in the tower, at least, where we can free roll, have a departure runway off runway 17, take majority of our aircraft over there. So we don't have to hit those gaps, I mean, my name on Instagram is Go Around 29, right? Yeah. I mean, go arounds happen, right? But we don't want to see that, right? Because we know how much of an inconvenience it is for the passengers and pilots and everyone else, and it costs money, right? We try our best to hit those gaps, and it's definitely a fun operation.
I know that UPS 74 comes in a couple times.
Oh, the Dash 8. Yeah.
Do they have to use 422 sometimes?
No.
Can you actually talk about that a little more? Because when I was there, we were taxiing out the other night, and they closed down the runway. Inspection.
Yeah.
It lands. They've got a chase car.
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's been a whole mess. When that thing's coming. It's gotten a little better now recently, but 747-8, Group 6 type aircraft, 212 feet, I believe, the wingspan on it, somewhere around that range. But it's a Group 6, the largest aircraft group, along with A380, that comes into Minneapolis. 30 left is the only Group 6 approved runway. It's 200 feet wide, although the runways are 150 feet wide. Previously, before 2 or 3 weeks ago, when the Dash 8 was inbound, we could not have anybody on the parallel taxiways, Alpha or Whiskey.
Okay.
Had to keep that clear.
Yeah.
Okay. So Dash 8 lands, MAC, the airport authority, has to go out in their little vehicle and do a runway inspection just to make sure no signs or lights have been blown over or whatever. So you needed a 6 to 8 mile gap behind the aircraft just to get Mac out there. And then it just all the chaos it caused on ground to move those aircraft away from those taxiways. And again, at Minneapolis, we're so condensed as far as our taxiways and how close they are to the terminal. And the moment you push back from the Charlie gates, you're blocking one of my taxiways,
correct,
right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy, right? So when that Dash 8 comes in, it just was a mess. Recently, as of 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Mac has signed off for anything. We can have anything smaller than a 76-400 on L4 whiskey.
So okay, that's why we could be there.
Majority of our aircraft.
Yeah.
So yeah, that caused huge pains for us.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen the 74 come in just driving by and stuff.
Yeah.
But that was the first time.
Yeah. I'm glad,
flight deck.
Oh yeah.
Watching it come in and watching all of the operation.
Oh yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. What are you guys doing? I mean, we hate to delay aircraft.
I mean, hey,
I want to be efficient.
For me, I was like, this is sweet. It's a 74.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, we don't see these very often.
Especially
so I'm
when,
like, give us the extra minute or two.
Exactly. Cool. So it is cool that it flies in the set. I mean, you know how historic the 74 program is, and you know when Delta and Northwest used to fly those, and they retired those a few years back. It's just cool seeing that aircraft again.
Yeah. You know? Were you working that day when the last one came into Mini?
Yeah. Yep. So did that low approach. Lucky. Got some friends in high places that took me out near the runway there, so got to go out and film that and just be able to see that. So I'm pinching myself because we have these flight trips here from that we have for every day we keep them for 30 days or whatever in case anything happens. But I'm pinching myself because I wish I would have saved more Northwest flight trips from back in the day. Just old historic stuff. It was cool seeing that 74 come in and here in Minneapolis, as you guys know, that there's just a huge aviation community, a huge spotting community, and they love seeing that type of stuff, right? So a few weeks prior to that retirement flight, the 74 was going to Tokyo, and to throw the spotters a bone, they have their little spotting area between the Mike and Whiskey intersections. I don't know if you've seen them taxiing out on your way to 17, but I actually had the 74 go over on Whiskey just to go in front of them, give them a little closer and see, and take a good few pictures of them. So, yeah.
So you brought in the flight strips.
Yeah.
Do you think you could tell us a bit first, though, just kind of the general process that goes into managing operations around this airport, just in terms of like, so people can understand, okay, you got like, we know you have a metering, you have a ground, you have tower. Do you think you could just talk a little bit more about what that process is?
Let's find a SkyWest flight.
Joe gets on a plane, mm-hmm. and Joe's a nervous flyer, and Joe wants to know more about the process.
Yeah.
So how would you describe the process to the average passenger?
So every flight that departs Minneapolis has a flight trip, IFR flight trip. Now you can fly VFR, and we can talk about that later, but you can fly VFR visual flight rules in your little Cessna 152. If you wanted to come in, I'd let you. Now, granted, you
actually I know 135 airline that used to fly in and out of there that had like a VFR only captain's program.
Oh, really?
And their clearance up to a certain city was just a VFR out of the Bravo at 4,000.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was there. Yeah, that just was get them in and out. That's awesome. But yes, you can fly VFR. Little guys are welcome to come in. Which was crazy during COVID because a lot of our airline traffic obviously has dropped off. But during the peak of COVID back in 2020, we were averaging maybe 200 flights a day from our normal 1,200-ish a day. And a lot of those was just cargo stuff, right? So here comes the GA guys. Hey, let's go get some touch and goes over at Minneapolis.
Awesome. Yeah, we got to sneak in. It was super cool.
They tried
to send me over to Signature, though, and I don't have that kind of money. So
yes, exactly.
And yeah, they got kind of a upset with that after.
Yes.
They're like, you have to pay a fee.
Yeah. And after a few weeks, Mac, they didn't like that too much as they're missing some landing fees there. But to me, I thought we should be the reliever for Flying Cloud, right? Flying Cloud is generally the reliever for Minneapolis because it's generally slower. But at that time.
Yeah. We were, I think there was one day we were both flight instructing during the height of COVID.
Yeah.
I think there was one day that I don't remember exactly what number
we
hit, but we were busier than Atlanta.
Oh yeah,
and like Dallas.
Definitely. I don't doubt it.
We were like, I think number
13,
five,
I thought
eight,
it was 13.
Something like that. We were really high up on the U.S. busiest airports.
Oh yeah,
because we had
so
many touch and goes and so many airplanes.
Oh,
in the
definitely.
Pattern.
I can see. I mean, on our radars, we can see when Flying Cloud. I mean, there's just a little beehive.
Yeah, it's
crazy. And here we're sitting with our feet up. you know, back in peak COVID, when we're only running 200 flights a day, and Flying Cloud's at, I'm sure, doing 800 to 1,000 flights a day.
Yeah.
You know, touch and goes and
it
all.
Was cool so it adds up. The option 30 left,
yeah.
152.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So we can maybe talk about more of that later.
Do you ever get stressed watching us extend our downwind into the Bravo there, and they're like, when are they going to give them that turn?
Yeah, we kind of keep your eye on that a little bit. But, yeah, well, and now with ADS-B, we can physically click on that aircraft now and see the call sign, right?
Oh, sure.
So it's you can't get away with too much now. Not you could before, but now with ADS-B, each transponder has their own unique code or whatever. We can pull it up. You can't just be squawking VFR and just never know who you are.
Right.
So for your average flight, IFR out of Minneapolis, instrument flight rules, as most if not all commercial stuff out of Minneapolis is, it generates a flight strip. Prints out a half hour before your proposed time. Shows the name, the call sign of that aircraft. For this one, it's SkyWest 4236 going to Iron Mountain up in Michigan. So it's CRJ-200 type of aircraft. So this all prints out at flight data. At flight data, we have a computer, the PDC computer and the CPDLC computer, where it automatically processes that flight plan for us. Where it gives the first initial altitude, departure frequency, squawk code, and then any other pertinent type information that we need to pass before the flight departs.
So is that just tied into the system, and that it's just that's its own thing? So like when we upload a flight plan or our dispatch mm-hmm. uploads a flight plan,
yep.
it goes into this computer. The computer sees everything that's going on, yep. creates a new route or approves the route mm-hmm. that was in
yep.
there.
So we have our preferred routes out of there. Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
Going to Iron Mountain, pretty much there's only one way to get there, being a short little flight like that. But going to O'Hare, we want everybody over on the Rochester 1 departure to O'Hare. The SIDs that are out of Minneapolis, and everybody should be on that one for O'Hare. But for this one, Iron Mountain, the Wellstone 7 departure, puts you over Green Bay and then direct to the airport. So every flight gets processed by the PDC system, and it makes it easy for us on flight data. Again, we don't have to use the radio. We don't have to use your voice. It clears up all that all the frequency congestion that flight data would. If we had to give clearances to every single aircraft, it'd be crazy.
Yeah.
So the PDC
you get a word in trying to get a taxi.
Yeah,
a
exactly.
Pushback sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So
you could just explain the PDC idea.
Yeah. So PDC proposed. Maybe it's not proposed. Wow, you're putting me on the spot here. Pre-departure clearance system, I think that sounds about right. So again, instead of us as controllers physically using our voices to give the clearance, the computer does it for us. Everyone, all departures get 7,000 feet out of Minneapolis, puts that on the clearance. It gets sent off to you guys in the cockpit. You guys acknowledge it or do whatever you want with it, and off we go. So now you guys put that in, you put the squawk code in, put that initial altitude in, get to route all kind of buttoned up, and then you're calling metering. Metering frequency, again, is another frequency designed to, in theory, to keep the congestion away from the ground control frequencies. We can split metering off like a single position, or flight data could do it as well. So that's the purpose of the metering frequency, just to keep the simple pushback clearances off of ground when ground needs to be moving traffic. Now, majority of the time now, especially since our traffic is down, ground will just have metering combined.
It's the same person a lot of the times.
Yeah, exactly. And for me as a controller, I like to have everybody on the same frequency, because when you're calling metering, you can't hear what's going on 0.9 or 0.8, right? So I like to keep everybody, depending on what's going on, if it's just a straight departure push, no arrivals, I'll keep everybody on metering. So you can hear everybody else.
Right.
But if there's arrivals getting mixed in, they're going to be on 0.9 or 0.8. So
right.
I'll just choose a frequency from there. So you call metering for the pushback. This flight trip will go in the ground controller's bay. The ground controller says SkyWest 4236, push is approved, runway 30 right. So based off whatever configuration that we're in, we try to take all northbound. We want to separate the aircraft on the ground instead of in the air. So any northbound departures go to 30 right. or 12 left. Any southbounders or eastbounders will go to the 30 left or 17.
Yeah.
So something like that, an agreed upon thing that you do, or is that, how much does the FAA play into that, or is that just something, you know, no, tower controllers just say, hey, this is
It's in our SOP. So it's an FAA type thing. So we want to try to separate, it's easier to separate the aircraft on the ground, because if I'm taking southbounders at 30 right and northbounders at 30 left, we're doing this off the end, right? And people are getting delayed, right? And it increases the workload and the complexity and all that type of stuff. So we want to try to separate the aircraft from the ground the best we can. So, you know, it does suck when you're pushed out of Bravo 16 and you're a southbounder and it's a long taxi all the way to 30 left, right? But that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So that's the rules. I mean, there are certain things we can do.
I don't know if break is the correct word. Go against that if in terms of like – sometimes with like the de-ice operations, right? Like if they're using like the 1-2 right pad, and like you're expecting 30 right, but then you got to de-ice at 1-2 right because they're not using the 30 right pad.
And that's the hardest thing to teach like the new ground controllers. So even though it makes sense to take your northbound flight to the 30 right de-icing pad just for a quick, easy taxi,
right.
But it could be 4 deep waiting to get in, right?
Yeah.
But there's no waiting over in the 12 right de-icing pad. So you're going to go right in there. Now, in theory, is it a closer taxi to 30 left? Yes, but only by about 3,000 feet.
Sure.
You know, the distance between the parallels.
Right.
You know, so we're supposed to definitely take you back over to the assigned runway unless something else is going on, runway closures, that type of thing during a snow event.
Which a lot of the times if you're de-icing, they're shutting them down anyway.
Yes. Sure. So, you know, so a good operating practice is, you know, just to tell the aircraft going into the pad, hey, here's the next round of runway closures based off that, you know, we'll get a departure runway for you.
Okay.
All right. So Joe, your plane pushed back. You talked to metering, you pushed back. Now what happens? Pilot calls generally, hey, ground, something like that, right?
Yeah.
So walk us through there, your workload up there now.
Yeah. So we'll play north ground here on the north side of the airport, working this SkyWest flight. Clearance will put the gate number on there. So this one's coming out of Alpha 4, which comes through Circle 79, which is a control point. Even though we in the tower, we cannot see that physically from the tower's too short.
Yeah.
So that's why we can't see that little back Alpha and Bravo area.
That's why we have ramp.
Exactly. That's why you guys have your own ramp, because we physically cannot see that from the tower. So we can't control that.
Really quickly, do you think you could talk a bit more about the whole circle and spot thing? Because for a lot of GA pilots out there, right, you know, you're at Flying Cloud here. We're at Elliott. Hey, ground, we're at Elliott. We're going west, right? There's no spot. There's no,
but it's almost the same concept.
It's a similar concept, but do you think you could just explain the whole the spot and concept?
So, we have spot 79 at Minneapolis. It used to be old gate 79 back in the day when they renamed the concourses and such. So now it's just called Circle 79 or Triangle 79 now since they repainted it. I'm more of a rhombus guy. I hope they do a rhombus, but they didn't ask my opinion on that. I just would have kept it a circle. Anyways, So your own ramp controller, SkyWest and Endeavor, they control that little area that we can't see. They'll push you back, taxi you to Circle 79, Triangle 79. It's just it's a known point on the airport, just like a known gate.
Can you see that one? Can you see 79 or not?
We still can't see that. Okay. Yeah. Just, we know that someone's there. Okay. We know it blocks Charlie 25, 26 gates. So we know you're there. So you call us out of Circle 79 and we get you out towards the runway. So it's just a point that we know where someone's at.
Yeah, it's just an easy transition point.
Yep. So someone calls us, you know, someone calls metering at the circle. The strip gets past the north ground. 3-0 right taxi out via Papa based on whatever traffic is out there. So again, it's very hard. The tower, you know, it's over a mile away from where Circle 79, that whole Bravo concourse is at. So it's hard, especially as new controllers, new trainees come in, join Papa behind the CRJ. Well, you guys know it's all CRJs down there. Well, what CRJ?
Every single one.
Right? Is it a CRJ 200? Is it a CRJ 700? Is it an American Eagle CRJ, right? So it gets very hard, especially for new controllers, to figure that out. I mean, yes, are they right? Join Papa behind a CRJ, but just, you got to narrow it down a little bit. And that's why I like having the off carriers like Spirit. It's a big, you know, it's a huge yellow school bus, right? You can't mess that up.
Right.
Yeah.
So what did that transition look like for you? You go from controlling up in Grand Forks. You've got UND.
Yeah.
So you got Sue as the call sign and they're all coming out of the same spot to you're sending, you're picking people up in these spots on an airport and you're saying, follow a CRJ, right? That's got to be a big transition for you.
Yeah, it is.
What is that like?
And actually, I mean, in my opinion, Grand Forks was a great facility for me, for any controller to start at. I mean, it's a busy facility, just like Flying Cloud here with general aviation, student pilot training. I mean, at any one time, I mean, the pattern can be full of, you know, 8 to 10 different, you know, aircraft going around and around doing touch and goes, you know, and just to practice that sequencing, practice that, you know, your priorities of who you need to talk to first, right? Managing your pattern. You don't want to have a long downwind, right? You don't want to have a long final. You want to keep things close in. So what do? Extend upwind. Right, you're going into the wind, so it slows the problem down.
That's a great concept.
Yeah,
you know a lot about that. Flight instructing with a million people in the pattern.
That's
music to my ears.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Grand Forks, extend up one for 4 or 5 miles, right? And I mean, what service are we providing, right?
I'd rather be extending upwind than downwind for 4 or 5
yes,
miles.
Because you're just, same with the controller, right? You're cruising downwind. You're
flying.
You don't know how many times I've sat there. Oh, there's 169.
Yeah.
It's like we're cooking. There's France.
Yep. So again, being at Grand Forks, you really got to, you're taught to how to manage the traffic, the pattern. It's almost, you can almost apply it to like ground control. When I first got at Minneapolis, where you want to keep things moving, right? And almost like a racetrack type circle pattern. When again, my trainer, Chris Oinas, that's now retired, keep aircraft moving. I don't care how you do it, just keep them moving, right? And that's the goal of it. You don't want to cause roadblocks, even though you're at Bravo 16, you're going the 30 right, but the line might be 10 people deep, 10 aircraft deep. So I'm going to take you westbound on Quebec to make the U-turn and come back and then pop us. So ever again, got to keep everything moving, flowing, you know? And that's where a lot of the stuff from Grand Forks, again, managing the pattern, managing the frequencies was huge for me, just working that level of traffic. I mean, you know, at Grand Forks, we had 2,000 operation days, you know, a good VFR day. It was busy. It was really busy up there. So it was good being able to take that and come down here, especially when we were busy when I first got here. Let's hope it comes back, but we're slowly getting there. So
at Minneapolis, right, what do you have for air traffic controllers there in terms of you've got ground, you've got tower, is that it? What else do you guys have in that building? Yep. Do you guys swap between it, right? You talked about north ground, south ground. Whatever, yeah, you've so got
different,
tower,
different
left
positions,
and right towers.
Local control, we'll start with that. So local control, you're literally controlling that runway. Okay. So south local, it controls 30 left, clear for takeoff, clear to land, right? I mean, just a basic, that's your runway. That's your pavement. That's what you get to work with. You're clearing aircraft that are coming in. Then it comes ground control, right? Ground control, we actually have 3 different ground controls. Generally, we only use 2, north and south. Basically, just split the airport right in half, right? So 2 ground controllers, 2 local controllers. We can have 3 local controllers if it's busy. So the third local control would work 1735. One controller to work 30 left, other control 30 right. Then flight data, that's a position. Another position up in the tower, TMU, traffic management. They are the ones that cause your delays. There's 20 aircraft trying to get to O'Hare all at once. We can't all let them go at once. At Minneapolis, there's actually an overhead stream that goes right over us from a lot of the Pacific stuff that comes down. So basically, we're almost like an on ramp to the highway, right? So it's better for you for us to hold you on the ground, because that 747 from Anchorage is doing 500-600 knots up there, and we're trying to get you and your CRJ to get in trail of that. So it might be a 5-minute delay, it might be a 10-minute delay, whatever's going on. So TMU handles that type of stuff, all those kind of seeing when there's going to be peaks and valleys at the airport and just managing that traffic. So there's a supervisor that will be up there, obviously managing the brakes and just going to, making sure that positions are split off when they need to be during certain banks of the day.
Is that seven? 7 people? 3?
About seven up there. Yep. So a couple people on break. So yeah.
And do you switch between those positions?
Oh yeah.
How does that work?
It could be randomly. It depends what's going on. If there's a ground trainee, they're working ground all day. So I might be stuck on local or flight data all day. It just kind of depends what's, what's going on. And
which one do you prefer?
Just thinking that.
I like ground. Man, I like ground. I really do. Ground's fun.
Yeah. You know? It seems like that's probably, like just how you mentioned it, it seems like that's probably got the most going on.
Yeah.
You know, with tower, right? With local.
It's just sending people over to approach really quickly. I'm guessing.
Right. Take off, so, land, yeah. Take off, contact, land.
Approach. Yeah. Contact departure. Exactly. Yeah. And local's just very straightforward, right? Aircraft are coming in the straight in, right? I mean, yes, you're hitting gaps. Maybe there's really not much you can do. Now, up at Grand Forks, local control, that's a different story. It's definitely more freestyle, like to describe it there. You can do certain things. You can extend upwind and, you know, make a 360 in the downwind or stuff like that. And,
you mean the CRJ doesn't get a 360 in the downwind?
I'd love to do it, trust me, but I might get a talking to pretty quick.
Regionals might not like that.
Yeah, So I like ground. It's just trying to put all the different puzzle pieces, especially during a de-ice or a swap event, you know, just certain things. And that's what I love about Minneapolis is we get the four seasons here, right? You get the de-ice season, get the swap season, and you get a little bit of fall and spring just kind of chill out, you know? So whereas like Phoenix, for example, my good buddy, the transfer down there, it's sunny every day down there, right? And it's 80, 90 degrees and they barely get any weather, you know? And it's funny when IMC weather does roll in there, I mean, they literally have to open the book. How do we do this again? Right? What are the rules? I'm serious, right? Like he was on that committee to the IFR committee, you know, to make sure everything's
IFR committee.
Yeah, I'm serious because it just never happens down there, right? And you're just so used to working, you know, working VFR traffic, you know. So
yeah, it's definitely got to keep your controller skills sharp up here. For sure.
Definitely.
That's cool.
What's something you wish that pilots knew about the limitations you have up in tower? And this doesn't have to be airline specific. Let's just say even you know our average student pilot. Bopping back into flying cloud, coming from our practice area, right? What is something you wish pilots in general knew? And this could be
Durland. Don't be scared of us, right?
Yeah, that's huge. Well, I mean, yeah. I try and instill that upon my students.
Yeah, I mean, you guys know. I mean, a new student that wants to learn how to fly, and especially here at a towered airport, I mean, they think ATC is like a godlike figure. Now, I may want to think I am, but I'm not. I want to help you guys out, right? Want to move aircraft, right? And just keep it simple, right? As far as you know. Who you are, where you are, what do you want to do, right? I mean, that's what it boils down to, right? And you know, we want, you know, especially when I was working at Grand Forks, you know, when student pilots came out or for their first solo, I mean, you definitely want to see them. You don't want to see them fail, right? And then they'll.
We don't want to see them fail either. Exactly. We're very invested when our student pilots solo.
Oh, yeah.
We're very invested in them not failing.
Yes. Tell you about that. Exactly. So, you know, doing your best to, you know, to see them succeed. And, you know, I'm not the person to chastise anybody on frequency. You know, you just don't get anywhere, right? You can tell about the rules or whatever, but, you know, it's just not the time or place for it, right? I mean, unless some really, really screw something up, but, you know, it's just definitely not the time or place. And again, it's a learning environment, especially at a G airport like this or up in Grand Forks.
So. Well, it's easy to be scared, right? I mean, I can understand that, you know, getting a phone number to call.
Oh, definitely.
How much discretion do you have when it comes time when you see that pilot that does something wrong, right? At what point, what's kind of the dividing line for you when it becomes, I have no option other than to give you a pilot deviation?
Oh, sure.
You know, I can say, hey, next time maybe don't turn the wrong way when I tell you to make a right turn, right? Where does that line get drawn as a controller?
We don't want to do paperwork just like you guys, right? Let's be honest here. Since I've been in the agency for 15 years, maybe I've seen two or three pilot deviations come through, right? Or been seen it myself. It's a rare thing as a YouTube channel might describe otherwise. They highlight all the bad stuff. But in reality, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of flights every day, right, that go great.
Yeah.
You know?
And everybody remembers and talks about the time that one person got a phone number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And honestly, when you get that phone number, honestly, I'd bet that 90% of the time, it's just a conversation.
Right. Like, hey, right? What happened?
Exactly.
Why did this happen?
Yeah.
What can you do?
Exactly.
You know, what could you have done differently, right?
Exactly. It's like, okay. And that's where most of it goes, right? I mean, again, unless something really, really bad happened, crossed the runway, someone was taken off, right? I mean, you can't brush underneath the rug, right? So, but for the most part, you know, when you're flying in, maybe you enter a right base instead of a left base or whatever, right? I mean, just little stuff like that. So,
Does that attitude change whether you're not like, you know, your control, let's say your controller at Flying Cloud, right? Mm-hmm. And you know that you've got, was it three, four flight schools here? I think it's three.
A bunch of flight schools.
No, I think it's four. You got four flight schools here, right? So, you know that almost every flight in a Cessna is probably a student pilot coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Does that latitude that you give them change
coming here to Minneapolis.
Coming here versus like, let's say that you're PIC on the 737 coming in from Denver.
Oh, definitely.
Right, and they do something wrong. Do you find that you give them a little less leeway, or what is that?
I mean, coming here to Minneapolis, definitely. I mean, everyone's professional, right? Professional pilots are flying in and out, and yes, there is a different level of expectation. But honestly, over the years, I've learned that there is a lot of pressure on new CRJ pilots, right? Let's be honest here. And to me, it could be a lot more than the solo student for his first solo at UND.
Yeah, it's because we don't have VNAV and auto throttle.
Yes, right. I mean, right. You finally made it to the CRJ, right? You're trying to provide for you and your family and everyone else, right? And you're there, and you'll have to talk about the probationary period. I'm guessing it's probably a year or so, and right, and they can probably can you for anything.
Yeah,
right.
They could, yeah.
So that pressure there, and as you get older, how you handle that, right? Yeah. So I definitely feel like some of the newer, you can definitely tell. I mean, as you guys know, the flow for these regionals now is crazy, right? You're seeing people that come and go left and right, you know, and you, sometimes you can sense that on the frequency a little bit. They're a little nervous, even as what I think is a newer pilot, you know, in a CRJ or whatever at Minneapolis. I can definitely pick up on that, and definitely get it. So, yes, is there two different levels of expectations? A little bit, but I also, again, just over the past few years, realize how much more pressure there is on, you know, on new pilots here at Minneapolis.
Everything's I think the big transition for me is like everything's recorded.
Oh, sure.
Everything you do as a pilot.
Oh, definitely.
Right? Like, obviously the conversations, obviously all the ATC conversations are recorded, right? Like everything there. But like when you're flying the airplane, right?
Oh, definitely.
Like, every single thing is tracked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if you're outside of limitations. And someone at home can
pull you up on FlightAware, why'd you do this?
And like the FAA gets data if, you know, if you, whatever, if you had too much bank, too low, or this, that, the other, like every single thing is recorded.
Oh, sure. And that's even how I look at it too as a controller. I mean, yes, now, you know, you can pull up live ATC and listen to us or whatever, but with our awesome group of spotters at Minneapolis, more than likely it's going to be caught on camera too, right? Yeah. If I go around or whatever, and someone might question the separation or whatever. Again, you have to actually, you know, see what's going on and get all the details. But
have you ever had that happen? Where you see something pop up on Instagram or something happens where you're just like, whoa, we should not have this on Instagram maybe, or
I don't really have the control over it. I mean, like, definitely like to just educate, right, why something happened, right?
Yeah.
The, you know, major causes of go-arounds in Minneapolis are during the wintertime, aircraft are done with de-ice, need their run-up.
And they do it on the runway?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? We get it, right? There's only certain spots where you can do it. I mean, I'd definitely like to try to do it in the taxiway, but sometimes you just can't.
Right.
And when a 7-3 is sitting on the runway for 30, 40 seconds and a guy's, you know, mile final behind and he can't see anything, right? It makes the hair on the back of your neck kind of go up.
Yeah. There's I hear that on frequency.
Yeah. And that's just, again,
like, hey, you got to
get rolling.
Yeah. Get rolling.
Again, that's just how Minneapolis is just. To me, it's just different than other type airports. When you get Shane on here, you can talk about O'Hare and he has a whole different challenges of, you know, of just a volume of traffic, right? I mean, that's their huge thing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, at O'Hare, you know what, they're running, what, eight different runways or something like that?
Didn't they just open their ninth one?
Yeah.
Eighth and ninth.
For your 2-hour taxi to the gate, basically, right?
Yeah.
So you've got, it sounds like, I mean, obviously social media is great for education, right? But I guess the question that I would ask is, do you ever have your moments where you think, man, I wish so much didn't get posted? Mm. Or do you think that, you know, there's a certain amount of people out there who, you know, who are spotters that might be posting things that aren't factually correct, that you find yourself saying, oh man, this isn't what we want actually going out into my Instagram version of a For You page, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a level of that, but also, I mean, I definitely can't control what other people post, but it's definitely an education process of as far as certain things. I mean, there's decisions and things we do in life that we have to live with, right? And if someone's going to post something like that, that's fine, right? And, you know, for my account, I don't as much as I want, I can't really post operational type pictures in the tower cab. So it's basically all stuff on the catwalk and whatever else. But I mean, if when I was a kid, I mean, be able to get the level of access, even just to see different type of airplanes that come and go out of Minneapolis would be a really cool thing. So that's why I do it. You know, it's just to see, you know, here's kind of a day in the life of a controller. Again, back when we were growing up, we didn't really have that access, Instagram, Facebook, you know, all that type stuff. So I do like doing it. Again, most of my followers are previous Ace Camp kids, right? And just nice. How we keep in touch. And you know, it's great that when they reach out, and it's even cooler when a student of mine goes through camp 3-4 years later, they're flying the CRJN.
Doing something. Yeah,
right. That's and, sweet. Oh, you know, hey Nick, or you know, hey, what's going on, man? You know, it's really cool to see where you're at. So that's a pretty cool feeling. But as far as the other social media stuff, you obviously got to be careful what you post, right? And you know, what, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, I did get in trouble for posting stuff, operational type stuff. And, you know, kind of got the ring around for that for a little bit. So I kind of learned my lesson a little bit. Again, all stuff, even life's a learning lesson, right? So you just got to realize for what you're doing. But I do like to, you know, to show what we do on a, hopefully on a somewhat daily basis. So definitely try to keep it aviation.
Do you guys give tower tours up there?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Obviously, so pre-COVID, still haven't got back to that.
Still locked down. Yeah. So, I love having people come up.
We'll be the first on the list. Yeah, once they open up. I've toured Flying Clouds Tower years ago. It was,
and again, just to see that behind the scenes, right, and bringing your students up and seeing.
Oh, that's the coolest part because you get up there and you realize just how old the technology is. How much they can stretch.
Oh, definitely.
A few expo markers. And oh, yeah. Some magnets.
People are amazed that we use these. We pass these around the flight strips around the tower, and it's just an old school technology. You know, I mean. Before this it was the shrimp boats on the radar. You know, they used to move. You know, basically you just on the radar, you're a primary target, and they basically just move the flight strip, the shrimp boat, along with it. So it is very, very older technology that you know, primitive technology that we're using, but it works, right?
Is there new technology?
Yeah.
So do any of the
this will be all electronic. We'll basically have huge iPads at our
do
at
any
our
facilities
physician.
Have that?
A few. Phoenix is one. Charlotte, I believe, is another one. It is coming. I don't know when.
It's just expensive and time consuming to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Training's
yeah,
got to be
training.
Right,
gotta,
right? Yeah. Now that I'm an old dog, it's like, you know, do I want to be using an iPad for certain things? Like, now it is cool the functions of it where. You know, you had this giant 30-inch iPad in front of your touchscreen device where I can, you know, I can just with my finger right swipe over to local control, right? Yeah. Where now I have to physically walk across the tower cab and deliver, right? I mean, just little stuff like that, right? Will be huge for us. Even if you want to change your route, if you don't change your altitude, I can just do it right there in position. I don't have to yell back to flight data, hey, do this. Yeah. So that'll be cool once it comes, whenever it does come. So.
All right, here's a fun question that we had for you. Do you have any pilot lingo that's a pet peeve?
Or anything
blocked. Anything that
blocked.
We say blocked.
Yeah.
how about anything that student pilots do, things people
just
say.
The whole talking too much, right? And again, just keep it short and sweet. That's all I care about. I mean, I'll have aircraft on the ground when they exit the runway. Yeah, this is Delta Flight 123. We're clear of 30 left, 12 right. We're on Delta, moving over to Alpha, and we're going to gate Charlie something or another. You know, right? It's just long. Just tell me your call sign, where are you going, right? And especially, I mean, there's definitely certain times and places for it, but, you know, during a busy DI session, got to keep it short and sweet, right? Yeah. And that's for me, that's my biggest pet peeve, just telling your life story on frequency.
Right.
Sounds like you like the SIA.
See ya. Yeah. Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah, cool. So I'll make sure next time I hear you on frequency blocked.
Yeah, who's that last go around for?
There's a tower controller here at Flying Cloud that's got a really good seat.
Oh yeah,
and you'll
awesome.
Have
it's
fun
funny
with
to hear.
Too.
He's just flying around.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Here in center and stuff too.
So. Yeah, I like to keep it personal with the pilots too. I like to joke around a little bit, you know. And there was again definitely a time and place for it. To me, that's where I like ground. It's just easier to kind of have more conversations type. You know, where we're local. Obviously, you're coming and doing 150 knots on final, and we don't got time to chat. Right?
4 miles from the threshold. Yes. It's not like you can be like, well, here we are. You know, it's like.
Have you gotten to know? Have you made friends that you've never met through this job, kind of thing? right? Where you recognize a voice and
oh sure
and yeah. you don't there's maybe not a relationship isn't the right word
but you hear the same you hear this oh, Delta pilot yeah. all the time
oh yeah yeah
you're like, I like this guy
yeah yeah and there's definitely voices that you know I'm like man I there's this one woman Delta pilot that just a very distinct voice she's always concise I haven't said hi to her yet you know but yeah. I just want to tell her. You're awesome on frequency.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it's very distinct and just short and sweet. I wish everybody could talk like you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
It's really hard for me to pick out like you guys when you guys fly through. I mean, yeah. just a bunch of dudes flying around. Right. Right? Like
there's a million of people.
Yeah.
From us that
yeah.
sound the same.
Exactly. So that's what it's easier like for female voices. You know, to pick those out. So I do appreciate when someone yells back to me, hey, is that Joe working? I'm like, yeah, it's me. What's up, man? Yeah. You know, thanks for saying hi. Cause it's just very hard for how many voices that we hear in one day, yeah. you know, so.
Well, it's good that I'm hearing you over this now. So then I can,
yeah,
once
yeah.
I'm out there
Hell yeah.
this weekend.
Yeah. Well, you send me your schedule, man. We'll put you number one.
We'll figure something out. You guys. So I guess, yeah, talk about your schedule a little bit. Not something we,
yeah.
what you guys
yeah.
do, shift length,
yeah.
days on,
so
days off.
ATC, shift work, you know, so Minneapolis, 24 hours a day, right? Someone's got to be there, right? So Flying Cloud operation is what, from 6 a.m. to
it's variable,
like
depending
10
on the
or
season.
11 p.m.
Yeah.
Depending
it could be,
on yeah. the
it could
season.
Be 8 so, in the winter.
Yeah. So not too bad, right? So again, one of those things you need to figure out, you know, if ATC is right for you, where you're going and can you do shift work? Generally shift work at all facilities, no matter if it's 24 hours or part of the day, your schedule is 2 nights, 2 days, and like a midnight shift. Okay. At a 24 hour facility. So generally you start your work week on 2 nights, basically 1 to 9, 12 to 8, something like that. And then morning shifts to finish it out.
Okay.
So that's a pretty standard, all throughout, the country.
8 hour shifts
or 10 hour shifts. Okay. Yep. So we have a few 10 hour shift, people, at Minneapolis. I'm an 8 hour, again, seniority is everything. As you guys know, as you get to, you know, bid your schedules and where you're working at. Same with us. Seniority is king. You get to bid your days off for the year. So back in
–
yeah, for the whole year. Yeah, for the whole year. So you know your days off a year in advance.
A lot easier wow. to schedule a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah exactly. So the top days off for air traffic control are Friday and Saturday. Friday, Saturday off. So generally on your Thursday, you're working a morning shift or the overnight shift. So you're done at 6 a.m. on Thursday morning. Then you're coming back Sunday night like at 4 p.m.
Oh, right.
Okay. So you kind of got the weekend off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
So if you're flying a Sunday night, generally it's the old dogs that are working.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. The old senior guys.
Are you, do you consider senior then?
I'm like number 7 at Minneapolis. So okay. I'm,
how
I'm
many
there.
Are there? What's the compliment?
34.
To, really?
Okay.
34. So yeah. that.
34 controllers at Minneapolis.
That makes
yep.
sense.
So,
yeah.
So you're near the top.
Yeah. Top dog. So I, my schedule is, I have a rotating schedule, which is, it's a 5 week rotation. I get 3 weekends off out of those 5.
Okay.
And then the 2 weeks that I'm working, working weekends, I have Tuesday and Wednesday off.
Okay.
So during the week. So, my wife is generally a Monday through Friday type person. So, you know, 3 out of the 5, I get the weekends off with her.
Nice.
So that's why I like it there. It's pretty rare, at least in Minneapolis, to get a Saturday, a Sunday off schedule. Some places have it. We just don't have it just to make it fair for everybody else, to try to get weekends off. That's why we kind of do the rotating schedules. But again, all through ATC, shift work, working all the different shifts, morning, night, overnights. So, yeah. Yeah.
What would you say right now to the high schooler that's listening to this that says, I want to do ATC?
Yeah.
You talked about having a plan B. You
yeah.
talked about the process. So what's kind of the number one thing you tell them?
First,
you
know, come in and do a job shadow. You know, come in and see, right? I mean, you're not going to be, you know, since I work in Minneapolis, obviously you're not going to get Minneapolis as your first facility. But it's a good way to see kind of behind the scenes, what's involved, the decision making. You know, what goes on, that you can't hear on frequency. Just to get behind the scenes and talk with us. And again, is this something you want to do? So, definitely a job shadow when we can do that. Hopefully it's going to open up here sometime soon. Again, send me a message, even if you're not in Minneapolis, the metro area, I know a lot of controllers, right?
Yeah.
So all throughout the nation, and they love to have you come in and do that. So to me, that's the first step. Just get it, you know, it looks cool on the YouTube videos and the Instagrams, right? Oh, that's a really cool thing to do, but you need to go there and just see it for yourself, right? And, you know, that's one thing with the Ace Camp type program that we do, and just to get that behind the scenes and see that type of stuff that normally that people don't, you know, get that access.
And where can, so is Ace just a local thing or is that nationwide?
Yeah. I mean, there's different Ace camps around the country. For us, for me, we do the best one. We're definitely well known, throughout the country. We do get a lot of, kids from all the country that come in. So it's just a really cool program. Again, the whole networking thing, is awesome. And, it's a really, really cool thing. So,
and then, so for those listening, your Instagram handle, what is that?
Go around 29.
All right.
Yep.
So then people can find you on there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Minnesota
Ace. I assume DM you if they're trying to get in, if they have questions,
exactly.
Hit you
up. Yep, exactly. Yep. Minnesota Ace Camp, MNAceCamp.org. That's where you can find that. We have our own Instagram page and Facebook thing.
Sweet.
So, but really, you know, for anyone that wants to be ATC or just aviation general, it's a good program to get into, and it's a fun 1 week experience. So, I mean, again, we do stuff this year. We're planning on going to that iFly place.
That's, we were just talking about that.
Right?
Yeah.
Indoor skydiving.
There's that one over there.
Yeah. So we're going to do that this year for the first time. So, you know, it's somewhat aviation aerodynamics, you know. I mean, I'm not the most aerodynamic person, so I'm not too sure how that's going to go.
Hey, that's awesome.
But, yeah, we'll throw the kids in there, and they can have a fun time. And just it's a good way for them to interact with each other. And again, not just doing aviation, you know, all week long. So,
yeah.
So one more question for you. And I'm actually going to combine it with another. But, like, what's the most difficult part of your job? And if you're able to maybe share with us, you don't have to, you can leave like super specific details. Like,
sure.
You know, like planes and airlines out of it. But what's the most difficult part of your job, and what's the most tense situation you found yourself in where whoa, we are really behind here.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Yeah. Weather, right? I mean, weather is definitely the number one thing that makes our job difficult. I mean, I wish it could be, you know, sunny in VFR every day of the year just to make everyone's life easier. But
then we'd never be instrument current though.
Yes, I know. But it would be cool. The weather when especially here at Minneapolis with the low visibilities for snow events, for blizzards, you name it, high winds, it definitely makes our job very difficult. Again, being where our tower is situated, being so far away from, you know, especially if we're in the 30s, it's very far away from the approaches. It's very hard for us to see. You know, just those low visibility type situations definitely makes you, you know, it makes you use all the tools that you have up there, being the ground radar, ASDX, and relying on your skills and training to make things work, you know. And but, you know, during weather events, you just got to slow things down. As much as I want to roll 6 hours in airborne down the runway, we just can't do that in the wintertime. So,
yeah.
Yes, pilots get frustrated when they've been on the ground for a long time, and we do too. You know, there's only so much things we can do that are out of our control. Maybe the next facility down the line, they're having issues with volume or whatever, and it's just easier for everyone to keep you on the ground here, right? To instead of adding more airplanes to the problem down the road. That's what I find very, very difficult here. I mean, it could be anywhere, but here, especially at Minneapolis, during those low visibility type situations, high winds, cross winds, right? And just not see anything, right? Yeah. And you're definitely the pucker factor is there.
It's real.
So, you know, days like this, or when it is VFR, I mean, I can have you guys come up and I can teach you the basics of ATC pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy when you can see the aircraft and you know, and everyone's on the same page about what's going on. But those days when those low visibility type situations, you definitely work for your paycheck, you know? So, you know, that's what ATC is. I mean, it's moments of pure chaos and craziness, but filled with majority of time, just nice, easy, efficient flows of traffic, you know? And, but that's why I like it. Just, you just don't know what you're going to get, right, when you come in. So as far as, you know, a certain situation, Nothing really stands out other than when you're in position working local control. And again, you just can't see those aircraft and it's definitely a stressful situation. So, but again, it's all about how you handle it too, right? You can't have someone that just, oh my gosh, I can't see anything, right? You just got to learn how to manage it, slow your traffic down and make sure everyone gets out safely.
Oh, we love going slow.
Yeah. What are some tools that you have to manage that? Yeah. Outside of yourself telling yourself, oh, I'm going to slow, you know, when I play golf, it's like, all right, slow down.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe this isn't the right decision. Right? Yeah. What are some tools that you have, like technology-wise and things
so
like that?
So the biggest thing that we have is our ground radar system, the ASDX. So if you look at Minneapolis Tower, there's that big white spinning thing on the top. That's our ground radar. So it spins really fast, picks up any kind of ground movement. But also that's why we have you turn your transponder on the ground so we can see you on the ground. So our computer, the ASDX system, recognizes when aircraft is either taking off or landing. So it puts up gates at every intersection, every taxiway that crosses the runway. So in the event someone was to cross that electronic gate, when someone's taking off or landing, alarms go off, right? Go around, cancel takeoff, clearance, whatever.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. So it's definitely a cool piece of technology and it helps us even not during the low visibility type situations where, if I'm working north local, I can see what aircraft or south local has in the event they have any northbound aircraft. So it shows the call sign and the first fix. Okay. So it can be, Wisconsin Dells, Green Bay, Rochester. So I know, I can see what the other controller has in the event, that aircraft needs to come into my airspace. So I can just pre-plan for that. So it's a good tool, not only during the low visibility, but just to keep track of aircraft on the ground and where they're at. So the crazy thing is if you didn't have your transponder on, the ASDX sends out its electronic waves and it picks you up basically as a blue dot. So if you didn't have your transponder on, basically you're a blue dot on the field. The crazy thing is it doesn't know how big that target is. So it could be a pickup truck. Or it could be an A380.
A 200 and an A380, yeah. All the same dot.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a little bit of a downfall of it because we did have an event a few years back where, again, a low visibility type situation, wintertime thing, where an aircraft was landing on 1-2 right. There was literally a dot on the runway near Alpha 5, which is about halfway, a little further than halfway down the runway. Alarms went off. Meaning the runway was occupied. It didn't know what it was. Turns out when the aircraft rolled out, there was a pickup truck on the runway. It was a Mack vehicle that was on the runway. Wow. It was just, lost or just disoriented, whatever, because it was a low visibility type situation. So, I mean, got really lucky there as far as, again, if it was just a small little, pickup truck, but again, it could have caused obviously big issues. Yeah. So
I guess kind of backtracking here a little bit. What, when you're working, what are your, like in your 8-hour shift, how long are you guys on, how long are you guys off? How does that transition period so like? Because I know they're always switching controllers.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you can only work. I've heard throughout the years that, you can only work so much. It's like the most stressful job in the country. Like all this, that, the other, how does that actually work?
Generally, it's about an hour on position. Okay. And we get about a half hour, 45 minute break in between. Okay. It sounds like a pretty good thing. I mean, it is nice having those breaks, but again, when I'm working ground control for over an hour, spitting out instructions left and right,
you're working like a dog.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Voice goes hoarse. You just need to freaking just clear your mind.
And right? how does the transition period work?
Yeah, does someone kind of stand behind you?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Watch and see what you're doing.
Like the last 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then,
so
especially it's always flawless.
Yeah.
It feels.
Yeah. Yep. So it's generally before the relief happens, that person will stand behind next to you, just get a feel for what's going on. Again, all depends on the traffic level, but during a busy type session, someone's sitting next to me watching how I move, what I'm saying, what I'm doing. Just maybe give a really quick briefing. Hey, here's the type configuration that we're on. Here's these aircraft, which you can already kind of see for yourself. And then they kind of just instantly kind of take over. Then I'm sitting next to them for 2, 3, 4 minutes, just making sure nothing gets forgotten. Right.
Are you wearing a headset the whole time? Do you have a boom?
Yeah. Like boom, just an earpiece.
And you just have like a mic in your hand?
Yeah, exactly. Mic. And there's foot pedals
too, for the button. So you just push that on and off. That's your push to talk.
Yeah. back at Grand Forks, you know, when I was new to the agency, I actually had the double muff headpiece, you know. So I always joke that, you know, it'd be kind of cool to be like surround sound hearing pilots from over here and over here, you know, kind of like 3D type, you know, type stuff. But so now I just got the little bippy in my ear. So it's a little more cooler, in my opinion.
You guys get jump seat privileges?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another cool benefit about.
Do you get flight benefits?
No flight benefits, right? That'd be favoring an airline, right?
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So, yes. Yeah, so we do get jump seat privileges. I believe the program's still on pause, but, we get two jump seat rides a year. Basically, any airline within the U.S.
Does that include like a round trip? Is a round trip one?
Yes. Round trip. Yeah. So one round trip or two round trips for the year. It's cool. The purpose of the program is just for us as controllers to just, again, go behind the scenes with you guys. What happens in the cockpit, right? When I say, you know, SkyWest, three's right via Popeye, and I get no response.
Right. Or, like, what are we doing?
Or giving a sequence
did we
call.
Switch and, runways in our, yes, all of and, our stuff.
Yeah. Right. But it's just, you know, it's good for us to see all the different checklists you guys are running and what's going on in your head. And again, just it's easy for me when I'm 150 feet up in the air instead of 122.
Yeah, 122 plus the tower cap.
Yes.
Plus that spinning right there.
Yes. And a mile and a half away, again, it's easy for me to see certain things in the tower, but it's a whole different world sitting down low riding in the CRJ, right? And it's just good for us to see that. So we get two of these round trips a year. Again, for
do
us,
you try and use yours every year.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's just
what's your favorite spot? What's your favorite trip?
No offense, but the cargo, the UPS, it's a blast, right? So I've done Delta, I've done SkyWest, I've done United, all great crews. But as you guys know, with the rules, when you're up in the cockpit, you're basically locked up in there, right? Now, if you need to go bathroom, you can, right? But it's an act of Congress to, right? The flight attendants have to come up. Stop everything, right? But so my first UPS flight, I mean, it was. I mean, we level or get beyond 10,000 feet, and the pilot turns around to me. You can get up and walk around, do whatever you want, right? And go in the back, and you know, and
check out the cargo.
Yeah, I mean.
Open up some packages.
Yes, the Amazon. Yeah, so maybe that's why the cargo delays when controllers are flying on their open up pack. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I've flown on the MD-11 with UPS, and that, I mean, that thing's like a rocket ship. It's probably my far 75 is my number one aircraft. As far as
we found that in your Instagram search, we did not ask you that
full
question
copy.
Because
what
we
is
found
the
that.
Least favorite aircraft?
737.
Why?
800 or 900 series. They're very fast on final. They don't
slow
down.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Okay. Very slow.
Oh, so you must love just Sun Country ripping in here.
Yeah.
All of their
800s. I know. But honestly, Sun Country's definitely saved the airport too, as far as the operations. I mean, they've.
Oh, yeah.
Without them, man, we'd be. It'd be really,
can you talk
really
about
dead.
That a bit more?
What's that?
How Sun Country saved.
Oh, as far as the airport, how we get paid, maybe it's another thing that your listeners want to know is we get paid based on how busy the airport is.
Yeah.
Right. So there's different levels of how we get paid. It goes for, it's weird. It starts at 5 and it goes to 12. 12 is your busy O'Hare, LAX, JFK type stuff. Level 5, I believe, is St. Paul downtown, Crystal. Here at Flying Cloud, I believe they went from a 6 to a 7 now, because it is.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. So the controller series. Yeah, so you just gave them a raise.
Yeah.
So
we actually need that.
Yes. Yes. Awesome. So maybe they're a little more happy on frequency, which they should be, because they're freaking rocking it. So yes, we get paid based on how many operations per year. Now they don't go every year and change our pay. You know, usually it takes it's a government process, so it's like a 5 or 10 year process.
What level is MSP?
We're 11. So okay. Level 11.
What is the
so
top level?
12.
12. Sorry, is the top. No, you're good. So yeah, so that's kind of how we get paid based on the operation. So so Sun Country, you know, they've started from they've way back in the day they just had what 2 727s. They've now grown to you know, a crap load of
36 or something of them.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. So for us, I mean, just to keep us engaged as controllers, I mean, just to see that level of traffic that they're doing is awesome. I mean, we were really, really worried during the pandemic that they wouldn't make it, just being they're a low cost carrier, right? They don't have the funds, maybe like a Delta has. So it's awesome that they've capitalized on definitely the leisure travel market here in the cities. And I mean, they're just rocking it. and they keep – I mean, every time I look at the news, I mean, they're adding more flights, more airplanes. So it's good for us just to keep us busy.
Right? You guys don't get paid per transmission like the Canadians.
No, we should be saying more on every time.
The Canadian I think that has something to do with like the Canada controllers. Because they say Roger after everything.
Oh, sure.
Right? It's checking in, hey, level 360 –
yeah.
And then they say something else. You say something, they say, Roger. It's like there was no need for a response there. No need, right? Yeah, but yeah. I've heard they
maintain radio silence.
Yeah, Roger. It's like, what? You know, I've heard that they get paid in part again, right? Things go into it per transmission.
Yep. Yeah.
So, like every Roger, that's, God, you know,
I'll be giving extra, wind checks left and right, man.
It's an extra transmission for every,
all right,
every
set. Maybe I should go up there then.
Can you talk to us about the, what's that consideration? Like, you got a plane that screams down final all the time and you have to sequence that in. What does that planning go like? Is that something that's more managed by approach, or is that something that you guys take the brunt of if they're bad planning? What does that look like?
So generally, if I'm teaching you for the first hour on position and local control, I'm saying you're not going to go in a gap that's less than 4 miles. So that when you say line up and wait for an aircraft getting ready to depart, that next arrival has to be 4 miles or further out. That's generally the rule. 4 miles and 170 knots. Okay. That's generally how we make things work at Minneapolis. Over time, when I first started at Minneapolis, older aircraft, DC-9s, maybe DC-10s even prior to that, but aircraft that the 75s are a great example of my favorite aircraft. I mean, they just get up and go. Huge engines, right? They're not setting any, as far as my knowledge, not setting any kind of engine parameters. They just go, right? And they take off like a rocket ship. Whereas a 7-3, not my favorite aircraft as a controller, because they take long to roll. It's a very, very shallow takeoff, right? Just they don't want to prevent you with the low mounted engines and the tail strike issues. So it just seems like my perspective, a lot longer takeoff rolls for the 7-3s and just a lot faster on final. They don't slow down like a 7-5 will on final. So they're doing a 150 over the approach lights. I mean, to me, they're cruising.
Yeah. Do you have to add a mile to the spacing when you know you've got 1 inch?
A little bit, yeah. Thinking? So, exactly. So, you know, 4.5 mile gap, 5 mile gap is something I'm looking for. If a 7-3, 900, 800 is on final. So, and you got to look at their speeds on final. I mean, if a guy's doing, just yesterday, we had very strong, winds right down the pipe, like 310 at 20 gusts in the 30. Yeah. I mean, there is aircraft CRJs doing 90 knots on final.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, there. I mean, I can probably get 2 aircraft out on a 4 mile gap, you know? So.
Yeah,
but all those just little things over time that you know that you
does that ever throw you for a loop too? Because like, I know in like the 200, you got to be below 200 knots before you can even start configuring, right? Sure. So obviously you're not working approach, sure. But right, they'll keep you know 230, 210 as you're coming in on the arrivals, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, in the 7 and the 9, you can start to configure at those speeds, but you can't in the 200 until you're below 200 knots.
Interesting.
So right, you have to. They want you to stay fast, especially in early mornings if you're the first flight in.
Oh yeah.
Right, you got it. You're leading the pack.
Yeah.
Right, but so you got to keep your speed up, and they say best forward speed to the 5 mile final or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, oh God, you know, for us too, that can be
then
something.
Then you're busy trying to slow down and final.
Right. And then you're slowing down, and then all of a sudden you hear approach say, all right, you know, aircraft behind slow to 220, everybody slow to 250, everybody slow here, slow there. And they're just walking back the line
because
you're crawling in.
Yeah.
You know, do you guys feel those effects too?
Obviously, definitely. Speed
fast, but what about slow?
Yeah, definitely. And not so much for it doesn't really affect us in the tower, but yes, approach when that final gets out to 10, 15, 20 miles, right? And just same rules apply for a VFR tower here at Flying Cloud. You don't want to have a long final, right? Yeah. It just the compression things just really start to add up on final and it's just very hard to control that.
Yeah.
Since you guys are trying to configure, you guys do need to do what you need to do to configure their aircraft to land.
Yeah.
And whatever speed you're going to do it, right?
At some point you have to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have to get flaps and I have to be stable.
Oh,
I have to do this.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yep.
We manage our stuff. How do you, what would you tell your average student pilot out there, you know, in terms of their flying, what can they do to help you? Right. Like, experienced pilot. Yeah. Keep your speed up. Sure. You figure out a way to slow down a CRJ. And
I think it's the biggest thing is don't, if you don't understand an instruction, don't guess what it is.
Yeah.
Right. That's where people can really get into trouble.
Yeah.
Right. And just say again, say differently, right? Because you know, whatever the control instruction might be, turn base, extend upwind. If they miss that call, it can turn into some pretty serious stuff, right? Yeah. So just don't guess with me what the controller said. So you're never wrong by saying just say again or say it differently, right?
Do you like to, if like somebody kind of in a polite way kind of tells you like, hey, I got to do 180 now. Like, or I got to get below 150 here.
Sure.
Like, when, you know, can I?
Yeah.
And I'm slowing to 150. I got sure. it. Right.
And I want to know that as a controller. Right. Like, just tell me what you need. Right? Okay. We'll make it work. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Again, I'm not, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, I'm not flying the airplane.
Right.
So I'm just doing my best with the cards that are dealt with me. And, you know,
that's
so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, oh. Last one. Yeah. How long does it take to flip the airplane around? Or not the airplane. Flip the airport around.
180 on the runway.
Yeah, right. How long does it take to flip it from using the 30s to the 12s? Well,
For example, just the other night, we tried it, you know, at night when you're approaching 10 to, about 10 p.m., the quiet hours, right? Yeah. So, you know, at Minneapolis, we're surrounded by, you know, a lot of houses where South Minneapolis is just off the end of the 30s. Whereas if we're on 12s, it's the Eagan and a lot of the industrial stuff out to the east. So we try to be noise friendly as we can, especially during those hours. So just two nights ago when I was working, it was lighter winds. It was like 300 at, you know, 3 or 4 knots. So we were on 30s for the majority of the night. And then once the 10 o'clock starts coming around, we start flipping the airport. It's easier now since there's not as much traffic, or when we did have traffic, the peaks and valleys, you want to flip it during that, you know, then that low point in the valley. So it can take 2 minutes. It can take a half hour.
Okay.
Would you ever land 30 right to park 12 right? Because I know like Ontario out in California at night, they hit a certain time where they start – They bring them in and send them out in the same.
Yeah, the same, I think I've heard even side. LA does that. I think
LA will do that too. LA, I believe. Yeah,
We've done it once at Minneapolis way back in the day, where again majority of those late night the CRJ flights will go to the out stations, Grand Forks, Minot, Northern Minnesota, Duluth. So we've departed 30 right, and then departed 12 left or 12. 30 right, depart 30 right, depart 1-2 right for the cargo stuff going back to Memphis and Louisville.
Oh, sure.
You know, yeah. and then we would land on 3-5.
Yeah.
You know?
Huh.
So we've done some crazy configurations like that. Just to see how it would work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But doing that now, we try to, again, just so everyone's on the same page. It's either going to be 30s or 12s, right?
Gotcha,
so not to just, it's, you know, you're just setting people up for, you know, for stuff. But
were you at MSP before they added 1735?
No. So that was before me. So they added that in 2004-ish.
How much of a help was that for the airport and just to turn?
So at the time it was huge, right? So there, 2004 was the busiest year at Minneapolis. I believe they were averaging around about 1600 flights a day. So they were pumping aircraft. They needed that other runway. You know, especially if the winds are out of the north or west, you can have three arrival runways, right? 30 right, 30 left, and 3-5. So you have three runways. Or if the winds are the south, having that free roll 17 runway. So it was definitely huge for them at the time. But then as things kind of as the years went on, I mean, now we're averaging 800 flights a day, 900 flights a day. So you know, almost half of what we were doing back then. So hopefully we're trying to get back to the swing of things. And it is nice. I mean, as a controller, more pavements, the better, you know, better, right? Having more options. And especially during the crazy wind events, we're not supposed to take off of 3-5 because of noise agreements with Minneapolis. But in the event that the winds are, you know, 360 screaming at 40.
Yeah. I've seen it done a few times.
Yeah, it's very, very rare. Yeah. So, but again, having those, being able to have those options as a controller is huge. So,
yes. Well, should we do some trivia?
Yeah. So we've got a little trivia game for you.
Oh, trivia!
You got six questions.
Your favorite.
You gotta get.
What's the high score right now?
Should we make him?
I guess
10 out of 6.
10 out of 6.
Okay. So you're not gonna get the high score.
You can't do it.
You can't do it. All right. What do you think? Should we make him get 4 or 5 right?
Should get them all right.
You should have all right. Them all right.
We'll see how they go.
What's the prize? What am I going for? That donut?
The donut's a given.
The apple fritter.
All right.
The game on. Apple it involves food. I'm in it.
$10 Starbucks gift card.
Nice.
Look at that.
Good for like one drink and right. maybe a pastry.
Yeah. Hey, I'm down with that.
All right. And the bonus one will be the hard one. I think you're going to cruise through these other ones, but we'll see. All right. Number one. Which aircraft has a larger wingspan? 737-900. Or an A321.
321.
Per our research. That is incorrect.
No, oh,
the 900 per our quick Google search.
Hey, I trust you guys.
The 737-900 has a 117.5,
okay,
and the A321 has a 112.
We're gonna get some ridiculous
okay
emails.
That's fine. Someone bring it.
Yeah, someone's gonna come after us.
That's my warm up. I fly the A321 for XYZ airline, yeah, and some variants are
gonna have an aircraft stop on taxiway Mike today. I'm gonna get out with my freaking tape measure. I'm gonna do it myself.
All right, number two.
Tough start.
This is a big one, right? So we didn't talk about it yet, but we know that you told us that you won The Price is Right.
Oh, yeah.
When was that?
2004.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. Go on YouTube, Joe Price is Right, 2004. You'll find me.
All right.
There's two different videos.
Sweet. What'd you win?
I can get to watch it. I can't
okay
tell you.
All right, good. Yeah, we're going to do it.
Yeah, so
we'll watch it.
If it's in two parts, so it might kind of sense how far I got.
Sweet.
So,
all right.
But it's pre-HD days, so okay. It's back in the – it was from like a VHS recording. So it's,
yeah.
But it was during when Bob Barker was on there. So,
all right.
Yeah, so it was a fun thing.
So we got for sale today a brand new A220, okay, Airbus 220.
Okay.
What's it going for?
And this is kind of a,
yeah,
what is the deal,
yeah,
you know, that they
what
get?
What Delta's buying it for?
Because, yeah, they're buying okay it, you know, so.
In bulk or whatever.
In bulk, okay. Yeah. So this is the Costco discount on a,
man,
on an
A220. Let's see here. The C series, the, I'm going to say it's 68 million.
Close. 81.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Weren't they going for a little higher outside the deal, like 90-something?
Well, so it's like the 300 versus the 100.
Yes, that was my next question. Yeah, I was going to start narrowing it down here. Okay, fine. All right.
I don't know,
but I didn't go over, so Price is Right rules.
Yeah,
so,
price, right? You gave him a pretty steep discount.
So we'll come back to you in a few episodes and see if anybody beats you to the number.
Fair enough.
All right, this one hopefully should be.
You better get this one.
This one should be good, but this is cool. This is for some listeners to hear. Some mm-hmm people that don't fly that often. All right, three call signs, old and new. What airline are they? All right, call sign Blue Streak.
Old.
No,
which
is that
airline?
Oh, what airline? Yeah. Blue Streak. Brown Streak. sorry.
APU.
The yeah things that we say, not when the mic is on.
Yeah, right.
Well, they fly for American Eagle, right? Right? Is that the airline, American Eagle?
Well, that would be like saying that Endeavor flies
for
Delta.
Okay.
Connection.
So yeah, the next step. Man, you guys really got me here. Is it?
And
no,
this
it's
is
not Mesa.
No.
And we
GoJet.
No. We'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
They repurposed their name.
Repurposed
from
their name.
An old discount flyer, famous on the West Coast.
But now they're flying on the East Coast.
Yeah, now they're flying on the East Coast. American bought this one.
Man, I don't know.
They have like a heritage.
I have no clue.
PSA.
Oh,
PSA.
Man. Okay. Yeah. All right. Dang, guys.
How about this one? This one's cool, but just an ode to the Midwest here. Water ski.
Chautauqua.
No. TSA.
Oh, TSA. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that was their. Yeah, okay.
That was all right.
I think we're going to go to Starbucks after this little gift card.
All right,
man,
here we go. This.
I swear I'm a very smart controller, all right? You should trust me when you fly in.
Hey, you're doing water ski.
Cactus.
Oh, America West.
Yeah. Whew. All right.
All right,
I got one
30%.
Of them.
1 for 3.
All right, I'll take it.
Hey, that's all right.
One
that's
for
good.
3 on yeah. the 1 for 3 question.
All right.
So far.
That's all right.
Hey, that's all right. Number 4. If you get the bonus question, though, once we get to that,
that's like a million points.
All in.
Yeah,
you're all in.
Yeah.
All right, number 4. How tall is the Minneapolis Control Tower?
122 feet.
We have
150. All right.
Probably close. Yeah, it's close.
Yeah. So we have this challenge at the tower now. Basically, it's called the Everest Challenge, where we basically, if you go from the ground floor and walk all the levels, which it's 9 levels to the top of the stairs, but then the tower cabs on top of that. I believe it's 112 from the ground to that very top 9th floor. But yes, and then the tower is above that. So maybe they're taking into account the antenna or something.
Yeah, they're probably including
yes.
like a very
it's gonna take
small
me a couple months to do that.
Again, you know, these are just very.
It's all good, man.
The answers
really
to these
right.
might be wrong.
No, I trust you guys.
There we go.
Good.
How many centers are there across the country?
22. 24?
We got 21.
21. Okay. All right.
22 might have been correct. Might be correct. It might have been correct if they consolidated.
Let's 21. Be honest. I mean, I haven't
How
looked at that number.
I don't know if they've in the year. Didn't they? I thought they consolidated some way back when.
Yeah. It depends if you count like San Juan as a center or, you know, yeah. Hawaii
but
center.
Hey, we'll give you that one.
That's all
you're right there.
Yay.
21.
Yay.
All right. Here we go. Let's see.
This is the bonus.
This
question.
Is super. But you were giving us a lot.
I know.
Of,
I'm actually a little.
A lot of here. Very like detailed information about Minneapolis okay. and about the airport. So this okay. is this would be interesting.
Okay.
The fix. And I might say it different than you do.
Yep.
Cusack. CUSAC.
Okay.
Where's that located? Do you know which approach it's used for?
It's probably like one of the outer fixes, right? One of the step downs.
Yes. Right? Yep. I'm gonna pull it open here. We have the exact DME.
It doesn't sound familiar on the parallels.
Okay. That's a good start.
That's a good start, yeah.
So I'm gonna say runway 4.
You were close. It's runway 22.
Runway 22. Dang.
It is the intermediate fix.
Intermediate fix.
So it is 11.7 miles okay, so, to the northeast of
okay,
the airport.
All right.
At or above 4,600 feet.
Roger that.
So yeah, it's on the localizer for runway 22.
Wow. All right. Dang.
That was a tough one.
Let's give him one more fix. We'll give him a little like redemption round
here.
All
right, here we go. Let's do this one here. All right. Washi.
Oh, 12 left. There we go. Okay.
Right.
Thanks.
That's right.
Thanks
money.
For that.
Let's see.
That big hook, line, and sinker there. Yay!
Yeah.
Nice. I like that guy. Nice. Finally, I get to hear it. It does work.
Yeah. Oh, I should have given you one of these earlier.
A lot of those.
I'll take it. That's fine.
All right.
Well,
that was fun.
Is that it?
That was a good time.
That's it.
Dang. All right, guys. Yeah. That was Ray. It was really cool. I really appreciate you guys doing this. It's fun to be here. Just talking about, I mean, I love doing that. I love aviation. Yeah. Love being a controller, right? Yeah. And definitely love to share the experiences. Yeah. So hopefully once, once we can get people back up in the tower, I'd love to have people up. So feel free to, send me a message, anybody out there about ETC aviation, ACE camp, you name it. Love to answer it. Got time. I got no kids. So I got time on my hands to answer questions or whatever. So best of luck in the podcast, man. Really, really, really cool you guys are doing this.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. We just wanted to provide a quick disclaimer that one of our answers to one of the trivia questions was incorrect. As a result, that's the last time Drew will be allowed to Google the answers without being fact-checked. If you can determine which one that is, feel free to let us know. Thanks again, and as always,
see ya!
See ya!
This was another episode of Living in Flight. If you liked this episode, please make sure to subscribe for more exclusive aviation content. Have any topic ideas or want to be featured on our podcast? Send us a message at listen@livinginflight.com. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Living in Flight.